love this podcast? Support us by leaving us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Hit the link in the episode description to support us now. Thanks for listening and enjoy.
Hello, hello, Nicole here.
Rolando here.
And we're doing something a little different today, but something we have promised for a while. You know how at the end of every episode, we encourage you guys to reach out and we say that we might just read it on the air one day? Well, surprise, today is the day, because today we're going to do a whole episode dedicated to you guys, to answering your questions, to reading out your emails, playing your calls, and sharing our thoughts on them and your opinions, and just appreciating you guys as our listeners and those of us who have reached out to us over actually the past 2.5 years, however long we've been doing this podcast. You know, this episode is kind of has been a while in the making, and we're glad that we finally took the time to give this back to you guys. So first of all, thank you for reaching out, for listening, and for supporting us. And you're welcome.
you're welcome. Because we're finally answering.
We're finally doing it.
Yeah. Although this isn't all the stuff. This is just the stuff that like we kind of figured this is good stuff to like have an episode for. Some of you guys may have already heard back from us via DM.
Yes.
Or I don't think we've written back an email.
We typically don't. We've always kept our emails back for this episode. We're like, okay, we're going to do an episode. So if you're one of those people who have emailed us and you're like, oh man, I never heard from them.
This
might be your episode. This might be the one. And hopefully we did include them in our list of ones we're going to.
I hope so. So yeah.
And if we did, email us back and be like, what the heck, guys? You guys, I was waiting for this and you totally overlooked me. Part two, exactly.
Part two, because that's what. But I guess that's it, right? We should just kick things off.
We should just get right into it.
But before we actually do begin, I actually do want to say, you guys should always be reaching out to us, so this is your firm reminder to reach out to us. You guys can email us. Our email address is remakesrebootsrevivals@gmail.com. You can also hit us up on social media. What's our social media number?
At remakesrebootsrevivals on Instagram, facebook.com/remakesrebootsrevivals, and on Twitter at remakespodcast.
And today we're going to be debuting some of those voicemails that we've been begging you guys to give us. You can always leave a voicemail at the Remakes Reboots Revivals hotline. Our number is 862-248-2326. That's 862-248-2326.
Absolutely. So yes.
Are you excited to listen to some of the
voicemails? I am excited because that hotline, we're going to play you actual call that we've gotten in a voicemail that we've been dying to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
So without further ado, we're going to cut to a listener call from David.
Hey, guys. Hey, everyone. This is Dave Diaz from Queens, funny enough, a friend of the show. I'm finally calling in. Just listened to the Coming to America episode, and I had a couple points, question to ask. Well, first I want to say I agree with Nicole's assessment of the film. I mean, you know, it's not surprising. I usually agree with her assessment of things. Most of the time. The other thing was about the white face. I think white face is much less problematic than black face, brown face, yellow face, red face, the whole rainbow faces. Because it's being done to the oppressor group, you know, and the majority group. Would I necessarily put it in a film myself? Probably not, you know, but I'm fine with it. But more importantly, I wanted to ask, after hearing the fascinating part of the conversation about, you know, was Eddie Murphy's character raped or not? The one thing I didn't hear brought up that I wish would have been brought up is, had his character been a woman, or had it happened the other way around, would we be having the same conversation about whether it was rape or not? You know, I think the media and the viewing public would be in an uproar about a scene like this. If it had been a woman being played for laughs in a comedic film, I don't think the scene would have even been in the movie in this day and age, and rightfully so. Should it still be happening the other way around, though, in this day and age, even in a comedic film? Would love to hear, you know, your thoughts on all this. Anyway, love the show and keep up the great work. See ya. Bye.
So we started off with a bang.
Yeah, I know, right? Like, this is, I love it. This is actually why we've been dying to play some of these voicemail, because I think this is a great question. Mm-hmm. And more importantly, you were complimenting us, so thank you.
Yes, so one, thank you for agreeing with my assessment of the film. I sometimes, after I record the episode, I'm like, did I get that right? Did I just miss the mark totally? So those are always, always nice.
I mean, I feel like you're usually in the right, and I'm the one who's like, I am the lone bystander who's usually fighting my good fight.
Yes, this is true, but it's nice to hear an audience confirmation on that. I agree with your thoughts on Whiteface, that it isn't as problematic because it's not really something that is as deep-rooted in racism in our history.
It's true, yeah. I remember having this conversation about why sometimes, like, I'm not saying that it's a weird thing to say, right? But like, why is it okay to do whiteface and not blackface? And my thing is just, my response to him was, and he was a white guy, was that it's just like, well, you guys have been the oppressors. And this guy, he said it. David said it. He's just like, it's right. They are, that's right. You forget that they have been the oppressors for so long. And granted, yeah, you're not oppressing the minorities anymore, but, you know, we're still suffering those consequences, you know?
No, definitely. Unfortunately, like a typical thing, you know, is like, well, if they can do it, we can do it. Equality, right? And it's like, it doesn't really work like that. Mm-hmm. So, right. But overall, your comment on sexual harassment depiction for comedic purposes in Coming to America is just, it was something that I actually was really glad that we talked about in the episode, and one that I'm glad that we can continue to talk about right now. Because 100%, it actually didn't even hit me when I was watching that movie that I'm like, oh, they're poking fun at sexual assault, right?
Yeah.
And
was I the one who brought it up?
You were the one who brought it up.
Wow, look at me. I'm so insightful.
Yeah. And it's like also like, oh my gosh, if this was a woman, it's like, it's two ways. I look at it both ways. Like one, if it was a woman, of course, I would have noticed what it was and identified it first. And again, when it comes to sexual assault, the main oppressors there are usually men to women, right?
Right.
So, of course, you're going to notice it more because it's more of a problem in that way. But sexual assault happens all across the board. And it seems to be either made fun of in like a not serious way because like guys can't get assaulted. That's awesome. You know, like there seems to be that kind of, especially in comedies, that tone of it.
Mm-hmm.
In this film in particular. But also like it's just not thought of as something that's like a problem. And like a something that should be addressed and treated as equally and as with respect and tenderness as it is for women. It didn't ruin the film for me or anything, but it was something that was interesting how in like 2021, it's like, oh, right, we're not here yet. And we're not able to like see these things yet.
Right.
And this is actually a perfect opportunity for us to be like, okay, fine. Movie's fine. Now, you know, maybe let's not do that anymore. And maybe let's actually take this seriously.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, this is it is a real problem. I actually do know. I remember in high school, I'm going to get a little personal here, guys. So I apologize to like bring the mood down here a little. But I remember in high school when I was on the wrestling team, this was my freshman year. One of my teammates had kind of told me another wrestling member teammate, and one of our coaches, she was our health ed teacher, right?
Yeah.
And you know, he spoke candidly about like what he felt, he was raped and that's how he had lost his virginity. And her response was, did you get hard? Well, it's not rape. And you know, now here's the thing, I was what, 14 at the time, 13 14, right? So I go the rest of my life thinking it's just like, yeah, she's probably right, he was hard, so is it rape? And you go on your whole, because she is a superior.
Yes,
she,
and those are your formidable years.
She's the authority. Yeah. So I've, you know, but as far as I'm concerned, like, no, he's raped. If he says he was raped and he was sexually assaulted, he was sexually assaulted. You know what I mean?
100%.
So, yeah, I get it. I understand completely where David is coming from with this question, because it's true. We didn't even think about it, right? I just brought up the fact that like, yo, this is still a rape scene. Like, this is interesting that this would be in this movie. Not even thinking about the fact that like, yeah, there's a deeper question here. It's just like, if this was, obviously, if this is reversed, you would not have it in a movie in 2021. Mm-hmm. But because it's a guy who's getting sexually assaulted by a woman, you know, and you know, there's a physical aspect here, physical aspect in the comedy here, where Leslie Jones is a much bigger person than Eddie Murphy.
Yeah.
Right? And that's adding more so to the funniness of it, or it's supposed to, which, and you know, it's unfortunate because that scene is just like, I think for a movie that I actually for the most part liked, I thought it was fine. That's a scene that I was just like, if you did away with this and gave me a different explanation in 2021, I'd be happier.
Yeah, it was interesting that that was the explanation they give. I will say another part of it that's kind of questionable is the fact that he was drunk. And mm-hmm. the whole thing is like,
and high.
And so usually, like, that's also a problem when it comes to sexual assault, period, is, you know, whether or not a person should. It's, are you taking advantage of them, right? Because they might be okay with it in the moment, but like if they wake up the next day and they can't remember it, like you did take advantage, right? That's a question that is, that's like always a major controversial thing. Mm-hmm. So the film even depicted True. That where it was like 20 years later, he didn't remember it. And he was right. like, oh my God, you know? And he looked at his friend like, dude, WTF, right? Like,
yeah, why would you do this? I saved myself for my wife, you know what I mean? Like, that's a story mm-hmm. that he's had, and that's a story that she's believed
yes.
all this time. And then, you know, to find out not the case.
Yeah, so it's kind of totally downplaying existential crisis that mm-hmm. he could have had, the character, whose name I can't remember right now, Eddie Murphy. So that's another thing, too, is that they took a controversial part. Prince Akeem.
I was close.
Prince Akeem, right?
King, kind of because traumatic. He becomes king.
Yes, he does. King Akeem.
That one, yeah.
Anyway, and then it like makes light of it in a lot of ways. And mm-hmm. I wish I kind of was more in an uproar about it, because like it is somewhat hypocritical that if the tables were turned, I would definitely be. But at the same time,
I mean, you were in an uproar already because like, this movie was needed. As far as you're concerned, it's just like...
incredibly indifferent to yeah. it in total. But like, just because the movie handled it kind of wrong. Anyway, listen to that episode to see where I'm coming from. But at the same time, you know, the main people who are victims and also not taken seriously when it comes to claims of sexual assault is more often than not women. So of course, yeah. I'm more sensitive to that plight, I suppose, in the depictions, because it's so often depicted mm-hmm. in like a careless, what's that word? Almost like it doesn't care, you know? What's that
blasé.
Word? Yeah, blasé, dismissive. That's the word I'm looking for.
Got it.
That's all I gotta say.
No, and yeah, I think it's totally. I think it's a fair point to bring up that we didn't bring up, but we were already like in such a heat of a moment conversation about the film in general.
Yeah,
it's sometimes interesting, right? Like sometimes we could touch the surface on some of these topics mm-hmm. and not really deep dive, but on a lot of the movies that we've covered, there are many instances where I guess if you really wanted to, we could do a deep dive in some of the deeper conversations about society and our culture based on
100%. Yeah. Also, you know, we try and do as much as we can in like a certain amount of time. So, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes you're doing like multiple properties in like an hour and a half and it's like, okay, oh, we got to talk about this.
Talk about this because no one wants to listen for more than an hour. I think usually we try to keep these down.
Well, people are obviously making it to the end because they hear about us mm-hmm. promoting how to reach mm-hmm. out to us. So, and
this
speaking of reaching out to us, we have gotten a lot of emails and one of them we're going to read to you right now. An email from a listener named Paul. Take it away, Rolando.
So this is an email from Paul.
Like I just said, Rolando.
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry. I have the script in front of me. So, all right. Here we go. I am a big fan. I have been listening regularly since Lost in Space. That is our first episode. You know what I mean? Right?
That is our first episode ever.
Good.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed your Hardy Boys podcast. I grew up watching the show and reading the novels in the 80s. If you want to giggle, there is an author named Mabel Maney who wrote Ghosts in the Closet, a Nancy Clue, I guess he meant Drew, Hardy Boy. Oh, no, this might be right. A Nancy Clue Hardy Boys mystery. As you might guess, she writes the mystery from a queer perspective. It is one of the funniest books I've read. Also, it scratched that itch I had about why I so enjoyed watching Sean Cassidy long before I knew why. Anyway, keep up the good work and congratulations on the marriage. Oh, that's for me.
Yes, congratulations,
Thank
Rolando.
You. Thank you, Paul.
Love that Paul sharing, you know, coming to terms with his queerness with us.
Mm-hmm.
Also, it scratched an itch that I why I enjoyed watching Sean Cassidy so much. Sean Cassidy, do you know who that is, Rolando?
Yeah, we saw the Hardy Boys.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot Sean, that.
Yeah, he was...
I'm just so glad you remembered.
He was like the twinkish fella from the Hardy Boys, the younger one.
Yeah, the old school 70s boys.
He was... you know, I get it. Paul, I understand where you're coming from, because even watching it, like, he still holds up. You know, like, sometimes, you know, age... Sometimes looks aren't timeless, right? Like, there's specific
his
to
is
a,
very
to
much
a
generation.
His was I think his was like, yeah, cross generational. This is just like, you're watching, I'm just like, oh, he's very, very handsome. I actually thank you so much for that email, Paul. It's actually funny, I will admit this, Paul, because of your email kind of sparked an idea I had for a film. And I'll just announce this right now. It's a film that I've been working on. It's in pre-pro right now, but I'm working on a documentary about homosexuals and LGBTQ community members and like their first media exposure to something that may have awoken something inside of them. I'm giving a terrible description, guys, but please watch it when it does come out. And Nicole, you're helping me with that, right?
I am, yeah. And if you actually want to volunteer to be in it so we can get a bunch of different perspectives, contact Remakes, Reboots, Revivals. Is this
totally
something...
true?
Oh, yeah. Okay. I was going to say,
I think that's fair. No, that's great. I actually didn't even think about that, right? I don't want to mix our podcast with my filmmaking, but you know what? Fuck it. Why not? Right?
It's all the same, right?
It is all the same. It's all art.
Yes. I also just want to say, if Paul, you've been listening since Lost in Space, then you might have heard our Murder on the Orient Express episode, in which I profess that I am a deep lover of the mystery genre, like Agatha Christie. I love her, and I went on and on. And I do love me a good mystery book. So the fact that there is a book called Ghosts in the Closet, which is from a queer perspective, and it's a mystery, I mean, you checked all the boxes for me. So I think I'm going to pick that up and read it. So thank you for the book recommendation.
Yes. Actually, Nicole, I do have a recommendation for you then. I can't actually can.
Wait, what is it?
So I listened to another podcast called BGM, Bad Gay Movies, Bitchy Gay Men. And their most recent episode, they covered a gay film that was, it's called Hot Guys with Guns. It's supposed to be like a film noirish, like gay movie, but it misses the mark. It's obviously a bad gay movie. However, I learned from the creator that there is an entire subgenre of queer detective stories, right?
Oh my God.
And hang on, let me just see if I can find you the, I'm going to see if I can find you the name of it. Queer detective fiction. I had it and that was so
is it like movies or
no books
oh, like,
novels yeah like there's like pulp? A whole series pulpy gay fiction novels. You know what, I can't find it right now, but I'll be
you'll
sure
send
to
it
add
to
it.
Me later
I'll send it to you later, but I want to add it in the show notes because I will find it by this time. So guys, you're listening to this, I will add it to the show notes in the event that you're interested in queer gay, like pulpy fiction.
Absolutely. So next we have a DM, which I believe we got on Instagram, and we got it very recently because it references our last episode we just did. This one is from Chris. Just listen to your GVK pod. That's Godzilla versus Kong. I feel you on Godzilla 98. I remember second grade Chris being angry people thought Titanic was a better movie. Also, when are you two going to tackle the MCU?
Excellent question.
Yes, one that I knew we were going to get. And
eventually, right? Well, yeah, because we've gotten a lot of these requests actually on either sometimes random DMs, and usually responding is just like when they reboot something, they haven't. Or,
they have not, other than Spider-Man, but we kind of missed the mark on that.
I think also Fantastic Four, we may have just missed the mark on that one too. I think that may have come out the year that we started the podcast.
Yes, yes.
And I would have loved to cover that one because the behind the scenes drama for Fantastic Four is, well, fantastic. You
yes,
know?
Yes.
I can say this right now. I think the Fantastic Four are slated to be rebooted one more time now with Paul Feige. Paul Feige or Kevin Feige?
Kevin Feige.
With Kevin Feige at the helm. Paul Feige, I think, is the guy from Sabrina the Teenage Witch, right?
The director, that I don't know.
The director of those comedy movies.
Like Bridesmaids. Yeah, that's Paul Feige. You are thinking of Kevin Feige.
Kevin Feige, yes. So Kevin Feige. Wait, did you not know that?
Are you sure that that's how he says it, though?
Or maybe Feig? No, I'm pretty sure it's Feige.
I'm not, I'm pretty sure it's Feige.
Maybe the other guy says it, Feig.
Okay, all right.
But did you know that Paul Feig, or Feige, was in Sabrina the Teenage Witch? He was a teacher.
Oh, no, I did not know that.
Yeah, he was a teacher for the first couple of seasons, I think. Funny,
wow.
Right?
Yeah, all right, so
back
funny.
back to Marvel Cinematic Universe. So I think most likely it will probably be Fantastic Four that we will cover. Technically, I guess we could have done Spider-Man, but I also think we missed that one, right?
We did miss that one.
Yeah.
Unless it's a remake, reboot, or a revival, or we can make an argument that it is a remake, reboot, or revival, we most likely probably won't because it just doesn't really fit, you know, our title. Mm-hmm. Even though next week, be sure to listen to a very special episode where we did make an exception. And, you know, I hope I have you on a cliffhanger there.
Okay. We'll leave that as a cliffhanger.
We'll leave that, right?
As but, most Marvel Cinematic Universe movies are.
And, I don't know if Titanic is a better movie than Godzilla or not. So I don't know. I need to rewatch both of them because they're both kind of eh.
Oh, you think they're both kind of... I don't know if I could stand by that statement that Titanic is the better movie than Godzilla because Titanic... I think Titanic hits the mark for me on so many reasons, on so many levels. The first half of it is like the romance story. The second half is like this action movie. In fact, the VHS is... That's right, VHS guys, was divided as such, right? After the Titanic hits the iceberg, it's all action.
And then it's snuff.
Snuff? How so? What, because she dies at the end?
Well, you know, just because a person dies at the end, it's not what, it's how, right? So a snuff film is kind of like, I guess... Would you consider the Titanic? I'm making an exception because technically, if I just Googled the definition of snuff film, a pornographic movie of an actual murder, right? Uh-huh. Now, of course, the Titanic passengers were not murdered, but they did die in a really terrible way. And it seemed to be slightly much with just like, oh my God, those old people and the children being put to sleep and the father carrying the son out of the water that's engulfing them to their deaths. It was just a bit much. I mean, of course, it was reality, but, you know, I already saw A Night to Remember from 1958 where they pretty much showed the same shit, so why would I watch a three-hour movie that just re-showed me that?
So we talked about this a little bit when we were talking about Godzilla, right? So remember, the new Godzilla, this is last week's episode already?
This is last week's episode, yeah.
Okay, so yeah, so last week's Godzilla, we talked about how the new Godzillas don't really show the pain and suffering of the people as opposed to the original Godzilla. And I brought up Titanic, actually, because I think Titanic is one of those like disaster movies that actually did a good job of kind of showing you the suffering of these people and that kind of just like how some of these people were just like relegated to just death because of their status of, you know, where they were on the boat. I agree with you. Sure, showing a lot of that death scene, like, did I need to see those two old couple hugging in the bed as the water was rising? Yes, I did, actually. That's it.
Well, also, I want to say one thing. Obviously, you know, if you're gonna make a movie with Titanic, then you show me the plight of the people. But there is a film that came out in the 50s that showed me this and did it in less time, and was more so like a ensemble piece. And the fact that there are so many similar moments, at least from my memory, it's been a while since I've seen it, from A Night to Remember to Titanic, makes me feel like all that extra stuff, you know, just focus on the story that you invented of Jack and Rose with just a couple little shots outside of Jack and Rose thrown in there. I mean, why do you gotta go so ham?
You needed to see that boat sink.
What do people still remember, okay, that he could have fit on that with her? That's what people remember. They remember the story of those two.
I remember. Well, good.
Which is good. Yeah, that's great. Yeah. You know, they don't remember all the other people dying as much. I mean, I'm sure people remember it, but
we're really getting lost in the weeds here about Titanic. Because the most important comment here was about Godzilla 1998 was such a fantastic movie, and I feel like it's so hated upon just wrongfully by society. We have wronged a great movie because, come on, have Leon the Professional? Matthew Broderick, Heather Graham,
a score with Puff Daddy.
It wasn't scored by.
Well, it was a song with Puff Daddy, who is now Diddy. But you know, I mean, come on. To Kashmir.
And then I actually enjoyed the Godzilla design.
Yeah, I mean,
iguana-like.
At the end of the day, too, it didn't take itself that seriously.
It really did not.
And if unless you're Godzilla from 1954 and you have a fucking some deep message to say, then don't take yourself that seriously, bruh.
What other movie is going to give me little baby Godzillas running around Madison Square Garden? None. Absolutely none. So,
and you didn't even know you wanted that.
I didn't. And you know what? Watching these new ones, I kept asking. It's like, well, where are my baby Godzilla running around in Madison Square Garden? I don't know. You killed off Bryan Cranston. I'm so cranky about that. You know?
Seriously, but can they shoot hoops, though? All right, so now we're going to segue. Thank you so much, Chris.
Thank you, Chris.
We're going to segue to another listener call, and this one is from a gentleman named Whitman.
All right. This is a long one, guys, so be ready.
Hi. My name is Whitman Portillo, and my comment goes out to the two hosts of Remakes, Reboots, and Revivals. Firstly, Nicole P., I appreciate your taste and commentary on movies and music. And if you want an excellent example of this, and I know she knows this already, just listen to the August 2019 episode discussing Westerns. Or listen to the March 2020 episode on my favorite show of all time, The Twilight Zone. However, with regards to your esteemed co-host, Rolando, I must say that there is that unforgivable act still looming over his head in my eyes from the September 2019 episode on The Dark Crystal. And for those that wish to fast forward, go about 28 minutes in and you will hear Rolando blaspheming this otherwise masterpiece given to us from the genius mind and creativity of Jim Henson. The nerve of Rolando knows no bounds, and even now I can picture him shaking his head at the very words I'm speaking. Listeners, for this, I hope you'll all join me in extending a tip of the hat to Nicole and a wag of the finger to Rolando, and for the sake of the listeners, I won't disclose which finger. Thank you.
So that was a fun one.
Yeah, I feel attacked. But you know what? I'm a principled man and I stand by my statements.
Yeah. And I feel heard and appreciated. Thanks.
So, Nicole, your response to being loved and adored by some of our more high-minded fans.
Well, I mean, you kind of had it coming, Rolando, when you pretty much dragged Dark Crystal through the mud.
I stand by that because I feel like people who love the Dark Crystal only are looking at it nostalgically, as opposed to me who remembers this movie as the horror that it is.
I disagree because it is possible that a film you find boring, other people do not find boring.
And not only do I find it boring, I also find it horrific.
I mean, well, I think that that's actually a pro for the movie because it's successful in those elements, right? I mean, the Skeksis are terrifying. They're horrific. They're supposed to be these people who are killing the land and disgusting, right? So that's effective. You find them horrific.
Sure.
You know, they're Muppets and they're different creatures from a different universe and stuff. So they were supposed to have these kind of fantastical looking ways to them, qualities and stuff. So, I mean, Gelflings I don't find horrific, but you know, if you look at them, you're like,
But they're just hanging out naked in by the lakes and stuff. It's just like, what is this about? What are
have
we
you never
children?
Hung out naked ever in your life?
Oh, I'm sorry. Do I live in Italy in the 1950s? No, I have not hung out
but
naked.
If you did, would you?
I do not have the body confidence to hang out naked.
Is extinct, okay? The last thing he has to worry about is being naked by the lake.
He has no morality, and this is part of the reason why his entire race was extinct. No, I stand by it. I think the pacing for this movie is so awful. It's so slow. It's I think a lot of it is weighed upon the narration, which is actually, so I had all these feelings for this movie, right? And which is why when we were going to cover The Dark Crystal, the show, I was kind of just like, ugh. And you know what? They answered all the problems with it. My mostly being pacing and drama. Where, you know, the Dark Crystal.
That's also a big budget Netflix 2020 series.
Of course. But I think at the same time, though, but they understood what it takes to, like, tell a compelling story, which is where I think...
Right,
I think
but
the original
original movie and they expanded upon that. Without the original movie, they couldn't have told their compelling story. I mean, the original source material is compelling within itself. That's why they have so many graphic novels and fan stories out there. They do.
I mean, yeah, you're right. They do. I think we talked about it on the podcast.
Yeah, we did.
I mean, continue. You don't think The Dark Crystal is boring?
I don't. So here's the thing. I do think that. Is it Jim Henson's masterpiece? No. In terms of at least a finished film product, I think in terms of what's that, like, world building, like, wow, you know, like, really, really great stuff. And I do think that it came from a visionary place. I do think the execution, you know, maybe it was because it was lower budget. Maybe it was because it was only like his second film he was directing and it was all Muppets and it was like really ambitious. And he probably had a lot of studio interference. Those things you definitely feel... kind of get in the way of the film. But I mean, if you think a Christopher Nolan film is not boring and you think Dark Crystal is boring, then I call shenanigans on you, because this film plays like has the same exact pacing as a Christopher Nolan film in my eyes, I'm not
Christopher Nolan film.
We're talking about the Christopher Nolan and all of his fucking movies.
Dunkirk, maybe that would be the only one that I think is a little on the boring side.
This guy is a visionary. He's got so many great ideas. His execution, not that great. Everyone gives it a pass because everything else about him is so impressive. But his story, they need fucking tweaking. And his pacing needs a lot of work. Right?
I don't disagree with you that maybe he can improve upon his pacing and definitely character development.
Like, and maybe some editing. You know, it's kind of like a book that, like, you know, they were like, oh, he's a genius, we're not gonna
but
edit
I think
it.
He's and also then... though but I think the reason he also gets a lot of like accolades and like respect, though, is because of like the audience, his peers, where we don't have a lot of filmmakers who are trying, like, outside of the Batman stuff, a lot of Christopher Nolan's work tends to fall on the original side, outside of the Batman stuff.
Okay, so I'm just gonna dial it back, though, to Dark Crystal. Just
cause. Yes.
The reason why I brought Christopher Nolan up is because, to me, this actually plays like...
You want to stab me.
I want to personally attack you. Well, I mean, you're coming for Jim Henson.
I'm not coming for Jim Henson. I'm coming for this movie.
Yeah, which is directed, the brainchild of Jim Henson. He created this from his
heart.
A
brainchild.
Jim Henson, I mean, I don't know if he did coke or not, and if he did, good for him, but I don't think so.
I feel like this is like someone who took psychedelics and like wrote a script.
Maybe. Hey, I mean, why not?
Like,
you ever
tried it? He wrote it overnight, right? He wrote it overnight.
I know he wrote it in when he was like snowed in and something like that, it all just like came to him and stuff like that. Yeah. So here's the thing. I brought up, let me get some water in me. I brought up Christopher Nolan because, to me, this is like a similar example in where this is a film that, like I said, everything's there except perhaps the execution, right? Mm-hmm. I can make more of an exception for The Dark Crystal because for me, it's just more like, it works more for me than like, say, a Christopher Nolan film does. And I know Christopher Nolan works more for you, but it's like kind of crazy how you'll... like say, no, this 3.5 hour movie that just kind of goes on and on is super entertaining. But this hour and 20 minute movie is like so boring and has terrible pacing, even though
because
there's so much world building.
20 minute felt like 5 hours when I was watching the movie. And that's like, and that was me as a child, outside of the fact of being horrified of the Skeksis, and also me as an adult.
I think you also just have like a ugh towards it.
I mean, yeah, granted, the first time I saw this movie, I was going to a doctor's office. It was in a doctor's office because I was sick. And every time I was at the doctor's office, this movie is either this movie, Labyrinth, and The Secret of Nim would be playing. Those three movies,
dark
for some
movies,
reason. Three of the darkest movies for children.
Yeah. I mean, like, I think you're also just looking at it through that and you're not like willing to open up your heart to it, Rolando.
I don't think I will ever see myself opening up my heart to The Dark Crystal. I like Jim Henson. Like, A Muppet Christmas Carol? I think that's his masterpiece.
He did. No. He was dead by the time that came
out. Oh, is that even his masterpiece? A Pirate Christmas? The Pirate one?
Again, he was also dead since that came out later.
When did he die?
He died in 1990.
What is his masterpiece? Muppets Take Manhattan?
That was directed by Frank Oz. So Jesus, the Muppets, I mean, he created all of these characters, right? That was kind of like, that came from him. You know, Kermit, Sesame Street characters, the Muppet Show and stuff. His brainchild is more so the Muppet Show. Yeah, Miss Piggy and all that stuff. I mean, all of his co-puppeteers helped come up with all these different characters and whatnot. But like, it was his company, right? So even though he didn't herald every single project, he's kind of like the guy that was like at the top of it, if you know what I mean. I mean, he's the reason it came into existence. So, and the only film that was a Muppet film that he directed was The Great Muppet Caper, which is my favorite Muppet movie. And it's been since I was a kid. And it's like a, you know, kind of detective jewel robbery case set in London in 1981.
I don't think I've seen this one.
It's not the most well-known of the Muppet films, but I think it's the best.
So. Interesting. No, I don't think I've ever seen that one. Well, there you go.
Yeah,
Muppet history in our questions and answers.
I could go on and on because I love the Muppets. I could tell you why it was done in London and why he chose that project to direct himself. But, you know, for another
time. More shocked that I've been viciously attacked and just like my name was just dragged through the mud and you have nothing to say other than like, oh, he's right. How dare you hate? How dare you hate on the Dark Crystal? And you know what, though? I am a, like I said, I am principled and I stand by my statement. I don't care. You guys can like take me to the guillotine if you guys want. I am holding my head up high for that chopping block, you know?
Yeah, maybe we should move on to we only got a couple more.
Yes, we only have a couple more.
We have another DM that we got. The rest of these are actually DMs, and
everyone's
for those
favorite
of you who
form
don't
of
know,
social media.
Yeah, DM is direct message. So I hope we're encouraging people to reach out to us more via DM. We're most active on Instagram, but you can of course hit us up on Twitter and on Facebook, where this next DM came from.
Yes, this one just comes from our listener Angela. Do you plan to cover any older movie remakes?
I actually love this question.
Yeah.
Because I wish we could. So our thing is that we always try and do very recent things. We either try and do something that's like a week or two old or something that's been done within like a month or two. Right. We typically don't like want to do anything that's too old because it's not relevant anymore. Right. There's constantly new stuff.
I mean, yeah, because like, you know, just from experience, our listener numbers go down.
We don't need like to tell them old. That,
okay? People must. We are transparent here at Remakes, Reboots, and Revivals.
All right. Well, let that Fine. Be all they know.
Fine.
But it would be really, really nice if we could just like kind of take it back to some older ones that are worth discussing. Now, if you've listened to the show, you know that I'm a film history person. I love film history. I love looking at it on like a historical timeline perspective, and I prefer older films. Right. Mm-hmm. So. An episode that I've been dying to do, but I don't think we ever will do unless I get an overwhelming response from this episode, is that Alfred Hitchcock made a film in 1934 called The Man Who Knew Too Much.
Right.
He then remade it in 1956 himself, of course. And he always referred to them both as like, you know, one was like his amateur try and then like the other was like the finishing touch by a professional.
Uh-huh.
And it's so interesting to look at a film, a director remaking his own film, right? Mm-hmm. And like how he grew and how he like expanded on certain things, you know, got away with some other things. So I've always wanted to do that deep dive into those two films.
What about a remake, the Psycho remake to Psycho?
So also, I would actually really be interested in talking about Gus Van Sant's remake of Psycho because, you know, a lot of people notoriously hate it, but I actually think it's a really interesting, almost like artistic way of going about it. And like, you know, I don't want it to sound too snobbish when I say this, but like at the same time, he kind of did a shot for shot remake, but he did something interesting where even though it's the same exact shot, the tone is different. Mm-hmm. And that is so worth exploring and thinking about it. Something might look like something, but does it feel like it?
Actually, so I love these ideas and I'm not opposed to doing them, but like I said, it's all about what listeners want. So you guys tell us, because one of the ones that I've wanted to do forever is The Brady Bunch.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
It's one of my favorite reimaginings, I guess, is the only way to really describe it because it's so reboot. I guess
it's a reboot for sure. Yeah.
But it's such a, but I love the idea of taking these characters from the 70s, right?
Mm-hmm.
And just like, we're not changing them. We're just going to throw them in the 90s and like see what happens. And it's just like, who knew art, you know?
Yeah, seriously. Yeah. And I, you know, it's so interesting too, because you know that they did it because of the success of the Addams Family in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
But because they chose the property of the Brady Bunch, you know, it's such a product of the 70s. And they're like, how are we going to do this in 1990s? Well, that's the only way you can do it, right? And that's what works about Addams Family is that they are in direct contrast to everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
So it's actually just kind of like a brilliant comedic move. I wonder if there's anything else we could like do, like, take something from the 90s and transport it into, like, 2020? That would
Great question. What property could you do?
Maybe Friends, because, you know, everyone's like, oh, Friends. And then we can, like, put them in 2021 and be like, oh, Friends.
Oh, my God. I would watch the shit out of that. You know what I mean? Like, I would. HBO Max is promising me a reunion of Friends. Where is it, HBO Max? I've had you guys for months now. But I would totally pay to watch even just like a TV movie or an HBO Max original movie of just like seeing like the Friends group reunited and having to deal with the fact that, like, you know, some of them might be problematic, you know. Joey being a womanizer is problematic. Chandler's, you know, absolute hate towards his father for being trans or just drag queen.
I think a trans at that point.
Trans, right.
Because his father was played by Kathleen Turner, who is a woman. So
okay, so yeah. Right. That's actually one of my favorite jokes, though.
Just and like, also, yeah.
No. Now that it's just, it's like when Rachel's looking for Chandler's dad, and it's like, oh, hi, I'm Amanda. Oh, man, duh. No, that's a funny joke. I thought it's one of the most memorable jokes, I think, from Friends. Problematic as fuck, obviously.
Yeah.
And that's what I want to point out. So I would pay for that.
You know? I think it's happening, Rolando. You know that it's happening. So
it should. But I hope that they do is similar to the tone of Brady Bunch, where it's just like, don't give me the Friends cast. I don't know how you do that, though. How do you make these six characters so, like, bubbled that, like, when we're watching a movie about them, that they haven't adapted to the times, you know?
Yeah, no, that's a great question.
That's the hard part. Like, you're going to have to, like, create some, like, weird time. Like, they go through a portal or something, and it's just like, it's 2022 now, right? I'm giving them some time to make the movie.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost as if the 90s knew that the 90s was going to be the last, like, major decade in which, you know, it would have, like, its own kitschy feel to it, so that they're like, well, we got to address the Brady Bunch now or else we can't.
Right.
Even though you're starting to really realize, like, things from the early 2000s and point it out as, like, oh, my God, that's so 2004.
Mm-hmm. It's so 2000 and late, as Fergie said.
There we go. So thank you very much, Angela.
Thank you, Angela.
On to our next DM. This one is from Alex.
Oh, this is a confusing one, but I'm going to ask it. Ready? This is for a DM from Alex. What reboot would you want to remake? And what remake would you want to reboot?
Oh,
do you get it?
I think I get it. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Because, I mean, us as the purveyors of this podcast, right? As the curators, as the know-it-alls of remakes, reboots, and revivals, we have made definitions for these terms. Yeah. So with that said, what reboot would you want to remake? All right. So this is a reboot that we would remake. So it's probably a reboot that we didn't think was good.
I guess so.
But had merits.
Yeah.
And then we would want to remake it.
I mean, there's already one that's being done this year, so.
What?
And Ghostbusters.
Oh, that's right. That's actually an interesting one, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's fair. Would that be your choice?
No, because since it's already happening, I want to make my own choice.
Okay. But I actually think I know mine.
All right, tell me yours while I pick mine.
The reboot that I would remake is probably the Power Rangers.
Ah, good one.
Because I actually think this Power Rangers, I think, is a great example of, like, kind of had the elements and yet the execution wasn't right. And it's just like, it's not that it's a bad movie, it's just like it could have been better. So that's why I would remake this reboot and give this an actual franchise that has some longevity. You know, dropping in I think their biggest issue was that they didn't show enough Power Rangers. That's one. Yes. And number two would be they kind of made Rita too one-dimensional. And I'm okay with Rita being one-dimensional, but I don't want her to be, like, kind of sexed up. I kind of want it to be kind of, like, campy and fun and quirky. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm thinking a Zooey Deschanel playing, like, Rita Repulsa for some reason would work. But she has to be very Zooey Deschanel-ish.
Yeah, well, that was also very 2010, so I think it's a little dated.
You're right.
Now.
I am dating myself now. Who would be our quirky equal?
Nowadays? Yeesh. Phoebe Waller-Bridge's?
I don't know.
Fleabag?
Oh, I've never seen it.
Oh.
Yeah, I hear. I hear it's good. I haven't seen it. Sorry. Okay, well, there you go. That's my answer. That's the reboot that I would remake. In terms of what remake would I want to reboot? Now, that's where you're getting confusing, right? Because
it's very confusing.
Can you reboot a remake? How do you do that?
How do you do that? I mean, you know, that's reboot this remake. I want to do the remake over again.
Go. Okay, all right,
it's going to be Mulan because they really messed that up. And I think that, you know, the fans of all the other Disney movies and the fact that they got these live action updates got musicals, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even The Jungle Book, which was like, they're going to stick to this being a musical. They did. I don't know why Disney dismissed the musical elements of Mulan and said people didn't want it, but it was certainly lacking. And all the other elements that they threw into Mulan were just didn't do anything for the film at all or the story. So that deserves to be rebooted as a remake.
Yeah.
And throw the music back in.
And I think put you Mushu could do that because you could then make a franchise out of it, which would
you
work.
You could, yeah.
Right? And Mulan, you could make a sequel to that movie, and then the third one would be when they get married.
I think they're kind of sitting on the fact that, you know, millennials, you know, we're of the age now where we're your biggest consumers, Disney. Mm-hmm. So stop sitting on the fact that, you know, I mean, you probably can't do much with Pocahontas because it's 2021. But like Hercules, Hunchback, Tarzan,
Hercules.
Why aren't you doing better things with these properties? Because, you know, we'll eat that shit up.
I mean, I will eat the shit out of Hercules. That sounded dirty.
That's
yeah, but I would totally
there's
eat up
nothing
Hercules.
Hercules. There's no plans for a movie adaptation. There's no plans for there's not even a ride or a section in any Disney park to this character. And same thing for Tarzan, who at least got his own Broadway musical.
But and Hercules, I think, had such good music. Like
Hercules
music
had great music.
So good. That is my thing. What remake would I want to reboot? I'm trying to think.
So that was mine, Mulan.
I think that was a good one. I think that's a great one. I'm trying to think if there's a remake that I would want to reboot. I don't know.
Selena.
I don't. That's a good one.
Yeah, because we had a lot of problems with that
one.
We did.
That one is super problematic. And it was it was more of a question of like, why did you choose to go like the ABC family route for this story?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know.
Well, this has been a lot of fun, but sadly we have come to the end and we only have one more DM that we want to read you guys.
Yes.
And hopefully we can do this again soon if y'all keep reaching out.
Yeah.
So we got a DM from Julie who said, I've been listening to RRR for almost a year. That's remakes, reboots, and revivals, guys.
Wow.
Do you plan to have any merch soon? So if you follow us on social media, in particular Instagram, you might have seen a couple of weeks ago that we were doing a giveaway of mugs of ours. Well, we actually have all of these mugs ready to go. We just kind of need to get our shit together and put it up.
Yeah. TBH. So the answer is yes, we do have plans for merchandise, but we just have to actually execute them. We also have like very, very cute t-shirt ideas that we do want to like promote. It's just a matter of like getting our shit together and really understanding how to get these to you guys with as little work as possible for us. So you know what, listeners, if you guys know of ways, by all means, reach out to us and let us know. Any help is a big help because
is a big help indeed.
Yeah,
yes.
I don't know. We've been doing this for 2.5 years. We've only just gotten a hang of the podcasting. Now we have to do merchandising.
It's like, I can't believe it.
There's way too many balls to juggle in the air.
For
you know?
Sure, yeah.
So, but no, yeah, we do have plans. The mugs are one of them. T-shirts are another. And who knows, maybe another range of assortments.
Yeah, that would be cute. If those do well, for
I don't
sure.
even think that's a, I don't think that's a phrase, but...
Yeah, yes. Maybe. Yeah, I don't think so.
But yeah,
you know,
thank you for asking that, Julie.
Thank you. And this might be we need, the push we need to get ourselves out the door, and so to speak.
For sure.
But
yeah,
so I just want to, you know, hark back. You know, we heard from David, Paul, Chris, Whitman, Angela, Alex, Julie. Guys, thank you so much for reaching out to us. And to all of you who are listening and who made it this far in the episode, thank you for listening to our whole episode and to all of our other episodes and to just being devoted listeners of our podcast. We really, really appreciate that.
Definitely.
And Yeah, until next time,
stay unoriginal.